The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. The End of War. War isn't hardwired into our brains, but it is hardwired into capitalism. Its continued existence is bound up with the existence of capitalism itself. War cannot be abolished unless the class interests upon which it rests are abolished. But most solutions for ending war assume mistakenly that war can be gotten rid of without getting rid of the system which breeds it. Politics must continue, war cannot, explains war historian John Keegan. Quote, that is not to say that the role of the warrior is over. The world community needs, more than it has ever done, skillful and disciplined warriors who are ready to put themselves at the service of its authority. Such warriors must properly be seen as the protectors of civilization, not its enemies. End quote. But it is not possible to separate war and politics. Lenin was fond of quoting the 19th century theorist of war, Karl von Clausewitz. War is a continuation of policy by other means. Keegan's idea of ending war, perhaps unconsciously, is for the world's dominant powers, for they control the world community, to come together and militarily impose peace. His answer to imperialist war is the answer every aspiring power strives for, a peace based on its own dominance, a Pax Romana, or a Pax Britannica, or a Pax Americana. Implicitly, though he states otherwise, he accepts the fact that war and politics are inseparable. The same confusion surrounds the belief that the United Nations can also be an instrument of peaceful conflict resolution. Also established after the Second World War, the UN's only decision-making body with enforcement power, the Security Council, is dominated by five permanent members: the United States, Russia, Britain, France, and China. Each member has veto power over council decisions, ensuring that U.S. interests can never be threatened. It is not an international parliament, but a committee of the most powerful states. When they all agree, the council acts. When they disagree, the big states simply ignore it. John Bolton, U.S. ambassador to the UN as of 2006, gave the clearest description of the organization's international role. Quote, there is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that is the United States, when it suits our interests, and when we can get others to go along. When the United States leads, the United Nations will follow. When it suits our interests to do so, we will do so. When it does not suit our interests, we will not. End quote. Marx likened the international capitalist class to warring brothers, ready to join forces against threats from below, but also in competition with each other, and therefore able to form only temporary agreements and alliances. One state may possess the power to impose some kind of peace based on its own ability to wield superior force, like a mafia don whose gangs have cleaned out all competitors and created the conditions for peaceful commerce in a particular city. This is the peace of the victor, a peace that lasts only until a rival gang emerges to oust the old boss. Though socialists look to a world without war, no socialist can condemn all wars. Wars of conquest and imperial rivalry are reactionary. But wars are also waged by the oppressed against their subjection. A million mostly working-class men died in the Battle of the Somme during the First World War. For the sake of profits for the British, French, and German empires. That war was reactionary to the core, even though each side in the dispute claimed to be defending itself against the other. The Civil War in the United States, a bloody affair, was fought to destroy the institution of slavery. That war was progressive and justified. We live in a world of abundance in which there is no longer any justification for war. Given a different social order, one based upon planned production and distribution for human need, it would be possible to provide everyone with a healthy existence without recourse to exploitation of one by another, or of warfare. But unlike pacifists, who believe that simply an appeal to reason or moral suasion can convince those who rule today to act differently, Marxists understand that war is built the very fabric of capitalism, and that it can only be abolished when the weapons of the world's ruling classes are wrested from their hands. We want the end of war, but we also understand that those who hold power in the world will not relinquish it peacefully. Marxists understand that the violence of the oppressor cannot be equated with the violence of the oppressed. As Trotsky explained in his defense of the use of violence by the Russian working class against the counter-revolution in 1919, quote, "When a murderer raises his knife over a child, may one kill the murderer to save the child? Will not thereby the principle of the sacredness of human life be infringed? May one kill the murderer to save oneself? Is an insurrection of oppressed slaves against their masters permissible? Does life cease to be sacred when it is a question of people talking another language? Or does Kautsky consider that mass murders, organized on principles of strategy and tactics, are not murders at all? Truly, it is difficult to put forward in our age a principle more hypocritical and more stupid. As long as human labor power, and consequently life itself, remain articles of sale and purchase, of exploitation and robbery, the principle of the sacredness of human life remains a shameful lie, uttered with the object of keeping the oppressed slaves in their chains. To make the individual sacred, we must destroy the social order which crucifies him." End quote. The war in Vietnam ended in a victory for the independence movement in Vietnam because of a combination of mass protests at home, armed resistance to the U.S. occupation in Vietnam proper, and the disintegration of the U.S. Army as soldiers increasingly refused to fight in an unjust war. During the first Christmas of the First World War, German and British soldiers, disobeying their officers, laid down their weapons and fraternized in no man's land. The Russian Revolution of 1917 forced Russia out of the First World War, and sparked revolts of workers in Germany and other countries, including mass fraternization between soldiers of opposing countries. This kind of international struggle and solidarity is the key to ending war. End of section.